The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Yeah, the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
All right. Had it all the way, right? Man, that's just the nature of this thing. It's the National Football League. You're going to be in battles, man. The most important thing is that you smile in the face of adversity and deliver the necessary plays. And, you know, that's the silver lining in tonight's performance, man. We're up against it. A lot of it due to our own doing, but you got to also tip your cap to the Bears, man.
I just, on the sideline, I felt like they gave me too much time. So, felt like we could go down. We've got, to my opinion, one of the best kickers in the league. So, wasn't thinking about a touchdown, just thinking about getting us down to field goal range. And everyone contributed. It felt like everyone contributed on that drive.
The Pittsburgh Steelers pull off a come-from-behind victory after blowing a 14-point fourth-quarter lead in Pittsburgh. That was Monday night's game. It's Tuesday. It's PFT Live. Man with the small head is back.
I'm back, baby.
Chris Sims. Mike Florio here with you. I'm doing great. I feel good. You know, it occurred to me this morning, with the Steelers beating the Bears last night, there were 8 interconference games
right. This
weekend.
Right.
The AFC was 7-1 against the NFC. Which is the only NFC team that won? Come on.
Ooh,
come on. Tick, tick, tick.
I don't know. Who was? Oh, the Giants.
Your dad played for them.
The G-Man. Yes. Yes. Yes.
All the other ones, all the other NFC teams lost, all of them. You know, the race for the 7 seed continues to be wide open in the NFC. The race for the 6 seed is in play again after the Saints lost, but Saints didn't lose to an AFC team. 7 NFC teams lost to AFC teams, and the Steelers capped it with that victory last night over the Chicago Bears. It was one of those games where early on it just felt like it was going to be kind of like Colts-Jets that started Week 9. Kind of a slow suffocation with extended garbage time. And, man, I wish the Mannings were on last night so, you know, they could entertain us in a boring second half. Well, the second half was anything but boring. And you got to give the Bears credit for not folding the tents, for not giving up. They need to be encouraged by what they have in Justin Fields. Yeah, they didn't win. Giants are happy about that, too, because the Giants hold their first-round pick. Good news for the Giants every time the Bears lose. But they got to feel good about Justin Fields, right?
Got to. I look at like all the quarterbacks that I rank coming out in the draft, and I look at Justin Fields and go, uh-oh, that might be the one I might be the most wrong about. I mean, first off, he's been pretty good from the start. I mean, yeah, you know, we talk about a lot, like just the demeanor, you know, looking like, you know, the deer in the headlights, all that, that whole syndrome as a quarterback. Never have seen that from Justin Fields. And then I think last night is as comfortable as I saw him in a lot of instances in the pocket, making like big time throws. You know, the 2 throws we've just shown on the highlights, they're big time. This is big time down the middle. You know, to this point, I feel like a lot of his throws are kind of like manage the football game type of football throws. And every now and then it was a deep throw down the field. Like last night, the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, they do a lot of different stuff on that side of the ball. And I know Pittsburgh won the game, no doubt, and we'll talk about that in a second. But to me, yeah, Justin Fields was the story of the game with some of the plays he made. Got off to a choppy start, like you said. They were a little all over the place, shooting themselves in the foot. But once he got a little comfortable, man, you see the talent moving around, making plays with his legs, threw some phenomenal footballs on the run. I mean, even the last touchdown pass he had to Mooney, you know, running to the left and just kind of flicking it with his wrist into the back left corner of the end zone. Those are things that I did not see consistently at Ohio State. In fact, not consistently at all. I mean, the throws like that where I'd go, whoa, he lost control of it. So good for him. And he was the star of the show last night, even though Pittsburgh Steelers won the football game.
He's got that deep ball that looks pretty. And I remember watching him play against Clemson in the college football playoff semifinal, whatever acronyms and letters and names they use.
2 years
the big
ago.
Game against Clemson. Just in general.
Oh, you're right. It was last year. Last year. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
It was for them to beat.
Firing the deep ball, looked great, got blasted in the hip, kept going. And you forget about it because they lose in the next round as soundly as they did to Alabama. But, you know, this kid's got something. And he saw it with his legs against the 49ers, and we saw it with his arm last night, and just hung in there. And, you know, I felt bad for him. I felt bad for the Bears after all that work they did, especially because at times it felt like they were working against black and gold and black and white as well.
You think?
A little bit.
I mean,
shades of Super Bowl 40.
I mean, game-winning drive, ball on the money
I
mean, almost,
figured out 35.
Well, it was game-winning drive to this point.
Arthur Mollett was the guy to pick.
He was
the guy to pick on.
Yeah.
Wasn't he?
Yeah, no doubt about it. He seemed to be the guy to pick on for sure. And, I mean, Justin Fields, though, this play right here, I mean, that's sick right there. That was a tight window. That was not an easy throw. You're right. It's back to picking on him again. But either way, the degree of difficulty, and how many times did we see that last night about Justin Fields? Like, you know, hey, nobody open, or certainly, hey, the pocket's collapsing, and he does a great job of kind of getting out of the pocket and, you know, saving the play from being a sack, maybe getting positive yards with his legs, maybe getting a completion. But I thought it was really impressive from that standpoint. And you're right. I mean, not only was the Steelers D good, I thought the officiating, you know, was very suspect throughout with some very controversial calls. We're going to forget about them because there was like two or three at the end that were so bad that we're going to forget about the first three quarters that were actually really bad too. And that to me was annoying watching the football game. I'll say that much.
You know, and this is a theme that keeps popping
up. It does keep popping
up. And you don't notice it. When the officiating isn't horrendous, you don't notice it. But when it's bad, it's really bad, and it really does stand out. And they really do need to embrace strategies, creative ideas for improving it. We harp on Sky Judge, booth umpire, but there are other ways to demand more from the officials. Before we get to that, though, the Steelers' ability to come back and win the game. I saw the graphic last night. All-time Steelers 214-0-2 when leading by 14 points in the fourth quarter. And I thought that one was going to get dropped in there. I didn't think they were going to pull it off. And you got to give them credit, especially the way they started the drive. It was kind of sputtery. You know, it was kind of clunky, that final drive. Throwing little short passes, the ball staying in bounds. You know, you can do that where 150 ends up being 15 seconds before you know it. And it just didn't seem like they were going to get it going. And then, you know, the next thing you know, they're in field goal range. And that was – there was that sequence where on every play a Bears player was lined up in the neutral zone. It was just weird. Like,
what?
How do you not have discipline in that moment?
I mean, the whole fourth quarter, that was an issue for the Chicago Bears. I mean, at what point were they going to tell them, like, hey, back up, guys. You're offsides. There was plays where people were offsides, and they stopped. I swear they stopped calling it because they were like, wait, we've called it 3 out of 5 plays. We can't. It seems weird to call it again. You know, I think Lewis Riddick made a point of it at one point. It was like, the Bears lined up offsides again. I don't know. The refs just didn't call it. But you're right. Clunky, that's the way to explain, I think, the Steelers' offense in general. I mean, you know, didn't start off good. They finally found a little – you know, slanting down the middle that kind of exposed the Bears cover 2 coverage, found another one very similar to that. and all of a sudden there they were sitting pretty for field goal range. But that's like, that's to me, Mike, I mean, Steeler football right now. It's defense. It's clunky offense. They had the ball for 34 minutes in the football game and had 280 yards of total offense. But it doesn't matter. As long as, like, Big Ben and the offense don't screw it up. Now, we saw the special teams kind of screw it up.
Yes.
The Steelers are going to be tough to beat. I think this is a few weeks in a row we've seen, though, when Big Ben just plays ultra-conservative, take the sack, who cares? All right, you got to punt it and play field position, and they play through their defense, and they're patient with the run. You know, it's not pretty, but it's Steeler football right now, and it's not going to be easy to beat them when he can at least, you know, adjust to the game properly like we saw last night and like this graphic says the last four games.
It really stood out last night.
Yeah.
Him coloring within the lines.
Right?
The lines are different than they used to be, and you were harping on that when they started the season 1-3. He thinks it's 2011, and he can do things physically that he can no longer do. He doesn't try to do that anymore. So
right.
They figured it out. They realized he can't be the guy he used to be. And he needs to get that drilled into him. And it's worked.
It looks like it's
working.
Yeah. I mean, right. There was a few times last night, Mike, right? I mean, I know we were texting a little during the game. But, like, you know, there was a few times where there's people around him and it looked like he wanted to throw the ball and try to do something Big Ben magic like the old days. And he just went, I'll just take the sack. Or, oh, nothing's there, let me throw it away and just get done with it. And, hey, that's progress. Good for him. Glad to see that he's doing that. And, you know, Steelers, even though it's not pretty, on a little run right now and gaining some confidence.
Another thing that isn't noticed when it's going well but stands out when it's not is offensive line play.
Yeah.
And the Steelers' offensive line has gotten better. And, you know, when the offensive line's working, you notice the running back, the quarterback, and the receivers because they're doing great things with the ball. When the offensive line isn't working, you're like, oh, those guys don't know how to block. But the offensive line, which was obviously a work in progress to start the season with 80% turnover at the starting positions, now they're
respectable.
They're getting it done.
Yeah.
They're getting it done.
Right. They are.
They're a lot better than they were, and it's allowing the offense to operate, not at the highest possible level, but high enough to complement the defense and even to overcome the kind of special teams miscue that the Steelers usually have to force in a game like this to win. They give you a free 7 on a fumbled punt return that's returned for a touchdown, and you're still able to win the game.
Yeah, no. I mean, it gives them a fighting chance the way the offensive line's playing. It wasn't great last night. That's a good Bears defense, as we saw. I mean, man. That Bears defensive line, especially when Akeem Hicks is in there, it's the real deal Holyfield, right? I mean, they made life tough on the Steelers every time they had a 3rd-and-1 or 2nd-and-short. And you were just like, man, can the Bears stop them again, especially in the first half and third quarter? It seemed like it was happening almost like every other, you know, drive for the most part. But I think it has gotten to the point where at least they can be patient with the run and Najee Harris. Yeah, it wasn't easy last night. But not every week is going to be the Chicago Bears front 7. That's for sure. That's one of the more talented front 7s in football. They got some big dudes up there. But you could see that it's good enough to where, hey, 2 yards, 3 yards, 2 yards, 3 yards. They can manage the football game that way. And, you know, when they play a lesser front 7, I think it'll even be more successful than what we saw last night. And I love the other aspect of, Mike, it's the second week in a row because we saw it in the Browns game, those little reverses and stuff. That needs to continue to be more a part of the offense with Claypool, James Washington, Deontay Johnson. They're too explosive at the wide receiver position. They can't really get them the ball the way they should in the pass game because of Big Ben and the offense still trying to find its way. So they got to do stuff to get them the ball. And you know, I always call it, and I think you know, at one point Lewis Riddick or Greasy kind of mentioned it, like Shanahan stuff with Deebo Samuel. Toss sweeps, reverses, speed sweeps. Get them involved. I like that aspect of the offense too.
They each had 2 carries, James Washington, Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson, and one worked out, one didn't for each guy. But when it worked, it gained more than 10 yards. And Najee Harris had a 10-yard touchdown early. Other than that, he had 21 carries for 52 yards.
Yeah.
But it just shows you they were patient with it, even though it wasn't busting huge chunks of yardage.
Right.
That's their formula. They're going to try to make it work. And if you hit a wall and you have to punt, so be it. we'll trust our defense.
Yeah.
And the defense, okay, hey, the defense let him down. At the end, it was fitting that the offense found a way to make it happen. I want to ask you something, because I've noticed some criticism of Big Ben's quote when he said, they left me too much time. Should he have said they left us too much time? Is that crossing the line when he makes it about him, or is that just, that's the word that just happened to pop out of his mouth?
I think it just popped out of his mouth. I think a little ego popping up there, you know, he's just letting you know, like, hey, I have done this before. I think that's maybe, he's frustrated. I'm sure he realizes the offense is not a well-oiled machine out there. I'd like to hear him say us, certainly, but I mean, come on, I'm not going to get too Twitter angry at that one.
Oh, there's plenty of other things to get Twitter angry about. We'll be talking about them later in the show. I was Twitter angry about this. We played it earlier. The third down run, the slow motion Tin Man is falling apart run from Ben Roethlisberger.
Right.
I don't know why they didn't review that. It sure looked like the spot needed to be adjusted. It looked like a bad spot to me, and there was no discussion whatsoever. It shows you what power the broadcasters have, because if they don't mention it, it's like it never happened, watching some other game.
Yeah.
That should have justified a replay review. It looked too close to not at least press pause, because the difference, especially for those, and here it is, there goes the Tin Man, need oil can. He made it. That's a horrible spot. When the knee was down, the ball was past the spot, and there was no conversation about reviewing it. And here's why it's important, Christopher, and you know this very well because it was one of your best bets. Let's say that the Steelers had gotten a first down there.
Oh.
Let's say the Steelers had scored a touchdown. Let's say the Steelers had decided to go for two to make it a 7-point game, because who cares if we're up by six? We're up by five. Field goal doesn't beat us or tie us. If we get one, it doesn't make a difference. We're only up six.
Right.
We got to go for two and go up by seven. Oh, they're 6.5-point favorites. They would have covered the spread. That's why that's important. I mean, we could say, well, they still won the game. Right. But everybody who had the Steelers minus 6.5 with one of the sports books that happens to be an official sports betting partner of the National Football League, they're pissed off. If I'd have had money on the Steelers last night, or as the case may be, if I had been rooting against you,
well, you were
to be right.
Like, I mean, you're bringing it up because you're still angry
about it. That's why I'm pissed off about it. So I speak on behalf of everybody out there who had the Steelers laying 6.5. Why in the F-K did they not review that? Because he made it.
It was close. I did not think he made it. I did not.
Review it at least.
Yeah, I can understand that. I understand that. You want to review it. It's a big spot in the football game. Let's not just, depend on the black and white referees who were horrible up to that point to just come down the line and go, whoa, I'll go right here. That looks like it's
Watch
where it,
again.
It is.
Watch
this
it again.
Exact
oil
science.
Oil can. First down.
Right. Mike, it could have been a first down. There's no doubt. Hey, listen, I bet you the Bears. I look short. They showed a few replays where I thought it looked a little short.
Where's the ball where the knee hits? Oh, the ball's over the line, Pete.
But they showed some replays. They showed some replays.
But watch the spot. Watch the spot, though. Where the guy on the line, the linesman or the line judge, whatever it is, the head linesman or the line judge, it's behind where the ball was when the knee hit. Sorry.
I didn't think it was a bad spot either. Mike's just mad because I won the best bet.
I'm just mad
because
you won the best bet.
Yes, exactly right. But, I mean, listen, Mike.
Turd.
I mean, go ahead, Steelers. Go for it. I mean, go for the touchdown. You're so dangerous on offense. The Bears were probably like, give them the first down. They'll probably screw up and give us the ball again.
That's
so... I mean, I don't think that Mike Tomlin was all that worried about it because he knows what his team is right now at this point, certainly. But that was a big-time clutch drive right there. But the thing you brought up a little bit that I do think we have to hit on with the Steelers a little is just the fact of, like, we've seen it rear its ugly head here as of late during this little four-game win streak of the defense wears out as the game goes on. So one thing that worries me is it's a Super Bowl caliber type defense that the Pittsburgh Steelers have. It's creative. They got a lot of good front seven players. Devin Bush continues to get better and healthier at middle linebacker. But, like the Seahawks game we saw on Sunday night a few weeks ago, You know, even a little last week in Cleveland, Cleveland kind of messed the game up with some late drives as they moved the ball down the field. And then last night, you see the Steelers' depth issues, I think, are a little bit of a thing to look at and concerning, you know, because, like I said, they're missing some defensive linemen, and you kind of see them wear out. There's only so many times you can rush the passer and just dominate the line of scrimmage in a football game. And I think that's one of the things I worry about them a little bit as far as the long-term outlook.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. But they've won four in a row after we wrote them off. I talked to Pat Freiermuth after they beat the Browns, and he talked about how they allowed that to become a chip on their shoulder, and he would prefer that they continue to be written off.
They like
Hard to do it when you're 5-3.
Right.
Hard to pull it off when you are in the thick of things now in the AFC. You were left for dead in your division. Now you are in the thick of things, and this could be a dangerous team in the postseason if they can keep it close. It was an aberration against the Browns in the playoffs last year when it was 28-0 before you knew it, or whatever it was. It was over. That grind it out, keep it close, trust your defense, hope for a special teams miscue, try to just kind of use your force of personality as Mike Tomlin to will the game your way. In a close game, it's far more likely. And it does help, Christopher, to have the officials on your side. I'll leave it up to you. Do we want to start with the horrendous low block penalty or the horrendous taunting call? Which one do you want? Dealer's choice.
I don't even know where to start. There's so many. I mean, you know it was a bad night when Steve Levy and company had to go, hey, I mean, the first three quarters were so bad, and they were getting to the point in the fourth quarter, they're going, but this fourth quarter, they're making up for it. And almost on cue, they were like, wait, we're the referees. We got to take over the game again. We got to take it over here. And then not take it over when we should take it over. No, Mike, it's an issue in the league. Anybody who sat with me in the viewing room on NBC, the reffing is all over
the
place.
You.
It's as bad.
I hear the curse words.
Yeah, I know, right?
I'm glad that there are no small children watching the games with me here in West Virginia when you're in the room. I heard you over and over again.
Right. I mean, I don't know. Do you start with the bad low block penalty, or do you start with the play right after that where Alonzo Highsmith takes four steps and then blindsides Justin Fields, but we don't call it because he's fast and strong and big. Like, let's see it all. Let's show all the greatest hits. We're going to forget the greatest hits because the third quarter was so horrible. Let's go to the low block. Yeah.
This one, got me going. Remember, this is a new rule this year. No low blocks outside the tackle box because the NFL is concerned after years of not caring about knees and legs. The NFL is trying to protect the health of defensive players. I didn't know the foul was attempted low block. First of all, you have to make contact.
Very suspect if that's outside the box. It's not outside the box. That's not what it was intended for.
It's not outside the box. It's not outside the box. And I don't think he even hit him.
He didn't.
He, like, stepped over him.
No. I mean, exactly right. It's roughing the game too much to the letter of the law. When it's like the refs right now have no common sense. I mean, that's, to me, what it's really come down to. It's no common sense.
Tony Corrente talked about it after the game. Usually when I say that, we throw to sound. This is a problem I have with the NFL. The players and the coaches have to go in and answer questions from reporters right after a game about their mistakes. Why do we insulate the officials from that? If we want transparency, Tony Corrente should do a press conference after the game. Not this pool report that every once in a while the NFL recognizes, we probably should make the guy available to one reporter in a closed room with no cameras or microphones. He was questioned by a pool reporter, and he was asked about the low block, and he said, the new rule this year is there should be no contact below the waist to any player outside of the tight end box. This player initiated low contact to a player outside the tight end box. You know, this is the Al Riveron approach, and I hate to do it to Al because he's not there anymore, but I think it's one of the reasons why he's not there. All you do when you're confronted with a horrendous call, you just say what the rule is and that you saw something that violated exactly what the rule prohibits.
Right.
To hell with whether or not that actually happened, right? Well, the rule says you can't initiate contact below the waist outside the tight end box, and the player initiated contact below the waist outside the tight end box. The only thing about it that was accurate was that it was below the waist. There was no contact, And they were in the tight end box. Other than that, yeah, great call, Tony.
I agreed. I don't know what to say. There were so many leading up to that, you know. But, like, you know, first off, yeah, there's just no common sense being applied. Let alone I saw a quarter earlier where Minkah Fitzpatrick came in and took Jason Peters, I believe, legs out. And Jason Peters got up and caught, like, he was like, wait, we're 10 yards outside the tackle box here. They didn't call that. See, to me, it was almost like a makeup call for not, they knew they missed that egregiously. So it was like, wait, here's another one that's close. Oh, see, I do see this. It just, to me.
But it screwed the Bears both times.
It screwed the Bears. The Bears got screwed a lot of times, let alone they tried their hardest to screw themselves. I mean, was unreal. But yes. A lot of those calls seemed to go against the Bears the whole night. I mean, there was definitely some questionable ones and then some ones where you go, Bears, are you serious? Have you played football before? So that's where, like, it's a little confusing, the whole conversation.
Let me pause here and climb up onto my soapbox.
Because this is a
prime example of a situation where a sky judge makes a difference. Because the sky judge brings into the officiating process the voices that we have at home, what we see watching the game. You have somebody who is part of the crew who sees what the millions who are watching it on TV or on their phones or wherever or however see it and can bridge the gap. So last night, a sky judge could have said to Tony, pick up the flag. They were inside the tight end box. Or pick up the flag. In addition to being inside the tight end box, there was not actually contact. That's what a good sky judge can do. Now, I feel like they're afraid to do it. They're afraid they're going to screw it up. But there are instances we can point to, and it seems like every week there are multiple games where you can say, if they'd have just had a sky judge and they worked it the right way, the sky judge could have communicated to the referee, either drop a flag or pick a flag up. It's that simple. And I know they're worried about, well, what if the sky judge sees holding away from the point of attack? Come on. That's part of what you tell them. You're not. We're looking for the stuff that becomes obvious on the broadcast. The stuff that that the person at home is going to say, that's not a penalty, or that is a penalty, or hey, maybe they should review that 10-man dive for the first down. Whatever it is, that's what the sky judge can help with.
Yeah.
So last night with that low block, a lot of things last night a sky judge could have helped with. And we wouldn't be talking about it today because it all would have been seamless. It wouldn't have slowed the game down. And they would have gotten it right. And it would have been a true measure of who the better team was because it would have been the skills and abilities of the players and the coaches, not the skills and abilities and mistakes of the officials.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's very well said. I mean, again, you know, the play we're talking about, and again, I don't know, do we have the clip of the next play where we're protecting quarterbacks and I saw penalties called with way less egregious contact all year and they don't call it with Justin Fields the next play. I mean, look at that. I don't know. I mean, I watched 20 roughing the passer calls this past week. There were way less than that. Way less. Ball was gone 3.5 steps at least. That to me bothers me. See, that to me goes into the Lamar Jackson, Justin Fields. They're fast. They're strong. We're not going to call it on them. But if Tom Brady, I would have called it a step
later. And they're not
later.
Tom Brady.
I know.
And they're not Tom
it's
Brady.
It's annoying, right? I mean, Aaron Rodgers, he gets that call too. It bothers me there.
Anytime the defensive player does this right after contact,
he knows it.
That's the red flag to throw the yellow flag.
There was a necessary, I mean, a roughing the passer call on Mario Edwards, I think, in the third quarter, early fourth quarter, that was less egregious than that on Big Ben Roethlisberger. Mike, what I came to last night is I think about you all the time. I go, they need to get a sky judge, and then within the sky judge, they need to get, like, it's like the elite of the elite. It's like these are the 32 people we trust the most to really know the game and have a little common sense. Like if a pass rusher comes in and his fingernail touches the side of the quarterback's helmet, we're not going to call roughing the passer. That's not what the penalty and what the rule was intended to do. It was forcible blows to the head of the quarterback, not just being touched near the head now. There's just too much of that going on right now. It's letter of the law. It's, oh, wait, we called three penalties in a row. Now here's an egregious one. Let me not call it. I don't know. It was all over the place last night, let alone we haven't even gotten to maybe one of the worst ones we've seen all year. Right.
Let me say this, because somebody told me yesterday, somebody very experienced, very wise in the workings of the NFL said, and this is over and above Sky Judge. This is just the replay function, because the replay function is still a mess, frankly. That didn't get exposed much last night because, for example, they didn't have to review the Tin Man diving for the first down.
Right.
But somebody said, and it's because it ultimately comes down to this. It comes down to dollars and cents. And when you're paying $64 million a year for your public pincushion, you can afford to, let's say, hire Mike Pereira, Dean Blandino, and Gene Steratore, put them in their own setup in Indiana or Kansas somewhere, not at 345 Park Avenue. There's still suspicion around the league that when it happens in the league office, you never know who else is in there telling the people in charge of replay what to do.
Right.
That suspicion is there.
Right.
So completely disconnect them from the league office. They're in their own place. You get the best of the best. All due respect to anybody else out there. Blandino, Pereira, Steratore.
Yeah.
They're the three.
Even our guy last night.
Who together decide, hey, if you want, that's what I'm saying. John Perry, Terry McCauley, no offense, but the three names that pop up to the top.
Yeah, those guys are good
Pereira,
too, though.
Blandino.
Right,
Steratore.
I got you.
Or the other ones. Yeah, McCauley, do five.
Get all five, right.
Or rotate.
More the merrier.
But the reason those guys are in TV, one of the reasons those guys are in TV is the NFL doesn't pay the officials enough. Wait a minute. Let me see if I understand this. I'm going to get paid a lot more money, and I'm going to be on TV. And I don't get micromanaged every week by the league office for every mistake that I make or don't make. Or, you know, we get our grades and it's all very stressful and I can avoid all of that. Okay, sign me up.
Yeah.
So the NFL needs to – Dean Blandino used this phrase with me a few years back after he left the league. They don't value the position of VP of officiating the way they should. That is the most tactful way possible of saying they are cheap.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, yeah, it goes, honestly, and I'm not trying to even bring this up. I've been trying to say this since Deflategate. Let's have a guy there. It doesn't cost much to check the pressure of the football every week. It's not really that much. It's not a big deal. But last night, I mean, I think to your point where you just want to see, listen, we want the penalties called. You want the egregious called. Yes, we know that. But at the same time, you don't want to see them overtake the game. And there was moments last night where you felt like they overtook the football game and, of course, cost the Bears points. The Bears lost by two. Tony Corrente cost them 4 points. I mean, period. End of day. I don't know. That's all you can really say. And that's upsetting as a fan. I can't even imagine if I was really gambling money
covered.
Or anything like that.
They're still covered. You're not that upset.
No, I am. I am. You know, I really not. I'm. It's not even about that. It's not. It really isn't. It's a bigger, broader topic.
Let's be fair. It's not as simple as saying give the Bears 4 more points.
No,
what you
I
have
know.
To do.
I know.
Is go back to that point and replay the game from that point out and see how it goes. But regardless, it was a major moment in the game. It was a major mistake, and. Hey, Tony Corrente will get the check mark or the whatever they do to downgrade an official. He'll be held accountable for it internally. They never get held accountable for it externally, other than being relentlessly criticized on platforms like this. But they should be press conferences where they have to answer for themselves, because the answers are unsatisfying. And if you thought his answer about the low block was unsatisfying, we'll get a load of what we're going to talk about next.
Yeah,
Cassius Marsh,
three more points, right?
With a pivotal sack of Ben Roethlisberger in the fourth quarter, key moment, emotional game. Steelers clinging to a 3-point lead with 3:34 left. There's the sack. There's Cassius Marsh. The big kick. The stand. Then this is where in the get off my lawn crowd, John Mara and company would say he crossed the line when he went over to the bench and said something to the bench and or the punter.
He didn't say anything. His mouth didn't move. You could see it.
Well, but it's that demeanor.
Yeah.
It's the in your it look, I'm not defending it.
I know.
I'm just saying
that
if they're gonna set up this ridiculous standard that tries to unplug the human heart from the human moment in a very inherently physical and demanding sport, if you're going to try to deprogram humanity, if you want these guys to be robots, if that's the rule you want, then yes, he violated it. So the better question is, and this is the way Brandon Staley, the Chargers head coach, articulated it a few weeks back. You are trying to take emotion out of an inherently emotional game. And I think ultimately you're trying to strip the humanity from the human beings who play it. And it's a step toward this idea that they are automatons. They're robots. It doesn't work that way. You can't expect them to go out there and give what they give to the game and have a moment like that that validates all the effort, all the training, all the study, all the sacrifice. You're in a big moment. You make a big play for your team. And we don't know what the backstory is. We don't know what Steelers players may have been saying to that guy.
He played
all night
in
long
Pittsburgh
in
for a minute. So yeah. He's looking over and there going, look what I did.
And you're yeah, you could have had me, baby.
Right.
You
could have
had me.
Again.
You can't unplug the human heart from the human body. And I don't know why they're trying to do it. And look, I spent time trying to get people to understand what they're doing. Not defending it, but like, look, folks, it's not taking away celebrations. You can still celebrate. The swing kick he did is fine. He crossed the line as far as the NFL is concerned when he glared at the sideline. But I think it's fair to now start asking, why in the hell do you not, what's wrong with what he did?
Nothing.
Why is that on the wrong side of the
line? Again, that's where it's like common sense. Does anybody have it that's a referee anymore?
Well, no. But Chris, I'm going to disagree with you. I think Kareny called it the way they're telling him to call it.
That's not.
Why in the hell do they want it?
To me, that is not the way it was explained to me or when we went in our NFL meetings. It was in your face. Like celebration, taunting of a guy who just got tackled. It was that. It wasn't, I'm 35 yards from the sideline. How do they know he wasn't looking at his mom in the second row? How do they know? Does Tony know?
No.
Tony was behind him. Also, what I want to know is, I think it's a little fishy that Tony threw the flag after he got bumped by Cassius Marsh.
I know. We'll get to that. Because there's a lot to unpack
there. That rule was not intended for that. I'm all for letter of the law. That's not how it was explained to us by the NFL. That they're wrong.
I think that
there.
They did mention that. I think they meant it taunting the bench.
Oh my God. Okay, if he's at the bench and he's over by the bench, he was by the hash marks. That to me is difference. Again, that's where I just go to like, there's got to be a little more common sense here with that. I mean, you're right. Probably to the letter of the law, he's not wrong. I understand that. But I think if you got all the owners in the room and all the coaches that are in the committee, they'd go, that's not what we really wanted. At the bench, we mean like he caught a pass for a first down, and he gets up and he spins the ball and he yells something to the bench. That's what they meant by the bench. They didn't mean doing that and going, oh my gosh, that's horrible. That's ridiculous. Yeah. That's where you cross the line of everything you say. You're right. You're totally taking emotion out of it if you're going to do that.
2 points. One, yeah. Tony Kareny was damn sure he was throwing that flag, and we'll get to that exchange in a second, which tells me that that's what he's been told by the people who supervise him, that that's what they're looking for. And here's his answer when he was asked by the pool reporter last night, what did you see after the sack by Chicago's Cassius Marsh in the fourth quarter that led to the taunting penalty being called? Said Kareny, first of all, keep in mind that taunting is a point of emphasis this year. And with that said, I saw the player after he made a big play run toward the bench area of the Pittsburgh Steelers and posture in such a way that I felt he was taunting him. I mean, there's a lot of assumptions that go into that conclusion. And like you said, for all we know, Mama Marsh was sitting in the front row.
Oh, look at me, Mom. I didn't know.
Look at what I did on national TV in a big moment for my team going against a team that once had me and got rid of me. But, the other side of that is, God, what was the other point? There was another good point I was going to make, and I lost it. I just completely lost it. I had 2 points to make.
Usually happens to me.
And I lost the other one, and it'll come back.
What was it, the bumping of the referee after that?
No, that's separate. That's separate. There was something in the moment of the taunting foul that beyond the actual, you know, what do you, it'll come back to me. Yeah. I'm not going to talk my way into it. Let's watch it again and maybe it'll come back to me. Because we see Marsh make the sack. We see Marsh have his moment, do the thing that guys get paid for. Yeah, do your kick. That's great.
He's by the hash mark.
Did he run? He didn't run.
No.
He didn't run to the bench.
He took three steps. Right. He's wet. It's a horrible call. It doesn't get any worse.
I really wish I remember my other point, because you know what? There's a chance it was the best point I was ever going to make.
You'll remember
microphone
it in a second. I'm glad it's happening to
there
you.
There is
it's
a chance it could have been the best point. Let's hear from Cassius Marsh with the best point that he made after everything transpired.
I think that that one was just bad timing. It's pretty clear to everybody who saw it that I wasn't taunting. And, I've been doing the celebration my whole career, and, it's just sad to see stuff like that happen in a close game like that. It's just rough, man. I don't want to say too much because y'all know how it is, but on my way to the sideline, I got hip-checked by the ref. And it's pretty clear. If I were to do that to a ref or even touch the ref, you know, we get kicked out of the game and possibly suspended and fined. So I just think that was incredibly inappropriate. It's upsetting, you know. I just think that it's I think that it's unfair that, you know, he has the ability to do that with no consequence.
Cassius Marsh is absolutely right. Now, there may be a consequence. I remember a time a couple of years ago, there were some officials suspended for different mistakes, sufficiently egregious. I'm going to have to research that and remember what it was for.
No, I think I remember.
However,
Before
I forget for the second time, my other point was this. And you know what? Thank you. It's not the best point that I was ever going to make. I was just trying to start the lawnmower. What we saw last night with the questionable taunting, the explanation from Tony Carreni, he ran toward the bench area. There was no running.
No.
You know, I mean,
there's none.
This is the kind of subjectivity that is baked into the rules that opens the door for the fix to be in. And I'll fight you if you say the NFL fixes games, because frankly, I don't think they're sufficiently competent to pull it off.
Definitely not.
No, they're not competent enough
Somebody
to pull
be
off
talking.
A fix.
Right.
Right, exactly. There would be more bodies floating in the East River than there already are from the criminal
How dare you
disrespect
the New York City area like that?
Or the Hudson. Well, I don't know where
they're going to go over there. You're going to involve New Jersey, huh?
You know what? They grind them up. They grind them up in a meat market in New Jersey.
What are you? You're racist against the tri-state area now. What the hell's going on here?
So anyway, and it's not that the fix is in. Stuff like that allows people to say the fix is in. And
that's right.
And it's hard to respond to it when it happens the way it happened last night, especially when the icing on the cake is Tony Carreni doing a little, I'm going to fall down here, doing this. What's this? Throwing the hip out when Cassius Marsh is running by. What's he trying to do? Draw a charge? What was that? Let's watch that again. We've been saving it for now. What in the hell is Tony Carreni doing? Did he think Cassius Marsh was going to invade his space? He hadn't even thrown the flag yet, so Marsh had
no reason
to be upset.
No running to this point. Did a spin kick and took three steps. Nothing. Why didn't he throw the flag already?
But watch this. Watch. Can we freeze it? Oh! Can we go back to that?
I don't buy
it
with Tony Carreni either.
Wait. Watch. They had a dance back in the 70s called the bump.
He's doing the bump. I don't buy any of it. I don't buy his answer. Yeah, I'm calling him a liar. I don't really care. I don't buy it. I've seen Tony Carreni get personal with people on the field before. I've experienced it. I've seen it. I don't know what else to say. I mean, I don't mean to go after the guy, but I'm going after the guy.
No, hey,
I've seen it. I witnessed it personal. I witnessed it personally.
How? Give me the story. Well, tell me.
I got hit late in a San Francisco game. Like late, like through the ball. I'm taking like four steps and I'm looking up in the stands and all of a sudden I get like cracked in the ear hole. And I get up and I'm like, that was a late hit. And I might have said the F word too. And then it was a third down.
Oh, might have.
Yeah, you know I did. So then I run off the field. Usually, like, when you come back from commercial breaks and there's stoppage time, the referee kind of gives the quarterback a warning. Like, hey, call your play. I'm about to blow the whistle. Right? He's not doing anything to me. So it's like now we've gone through three commercial breaks, a quarter break, and he just blowing the whistle while I'm like, we're all kind of just standing around, like waiting for things to go, and he's starting the clock. So finally, I go, "Are you going to warn me before you start the clock again?" I mean, usually that's protocol. And he goes, "Are you going to apologize to what you said to me earlier?" And I wanted to lose my crap. And after the game, I wanted to call him out. If we won, I probably would have, because it just showed me he got personal. He was gonna take the game into his own hands there. That, to me, he could say whatever he wants. He should have thrown the flag 5 seconds before that if he really thought it was taunting. To me, there was something else that went in there that he didn't like either. I don't know what it was. It was a pitiful call. It was a pitifully officiated football game. I don't know.
Yeah, and Brian Griese also said he had interactions unspecified with Tony Corrente. That's unacceptable.
It's unacceptable.
They are the ones who are supposed to be the robots.
Right.
They want the players to be the robots. The officials definitely are supposed to be robots.
Uh-huh. That's to me, that bothers me. And again, if you start to hear more stories like that, you know, to your point, where now players and ex-players are going, man, he got personal. Like, it bothered him. And you're going to have more of the fixes in. Oh, I mean, it's to me, totally unacceptable. A lot of calls during that game. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go personal on the guy, but it just.
No, it's fine. Listen. They need to be held accountable. And if that's an interaction that you genuinely had with Tony Corrente, it's relevant to this point. That's an experience, a personal experience that overlaps with what we're dealing with here, where a guy, and that's the irony of it, and I think we're using the term right, I never quite know. The irony is that they're trying to strip the emotion out of the players when the game that they're playing is inherently emotional, and the officials who should be emotionless robots have whatever it is, vendetta, chip on their shoulder, you know, I'll show you. I don't know what he was trying to do, swinging his ass in the direction of Cassius Marsh. I've never seen that before.
I have never seen it either. I could also speak to, you know, the Gene Steratores of the world and those guys where, yeah, I mean, Ed Hockley, it might have been a heated moment of the game, and I might have sworn at them too. But they give me a look like, you're crazy. And then that was it. I never felt like it was personal. You know, and then later on, that referee might explain to me, like, you know, especially Gene Steratore, he might, you know, explain to me why he didn't call that penalty that I mother effed them about a few minutes before there. You know, I mean, so there's got to be a little bit of a trust there between the players, the refs, and yeah, to me, there was some issues last night with the reffing for sure. And a lot of it went back to the one guy. It was him making the call or not making some calls at times where I just shook my head.
Well, we're going to take a closer look at all of this stuff. I'm going
to
go back
like
and see when.
It down.
Here it is. Hugo Cruz in 2018, a referee was fired midseason in the Super Bowl era. He drew criticism for a missed false start in the Chargers' victory over the Browns in Week 6, failed to throw a flag on L.A. tackle Russell Okung prior to a Chargers touchdown. The blown call against L.A. did not determine Cruz's firing. According to ESPN's Kevin Seifert, rather, Cruz was fired for not maintaining a high level of performance over a sustained period. But that's a firing of an official during a season who just, they're saying the guy isn't getting it done. There have been incidents where there's been some sort of a suspension. There's been something that's happened because of an incident. I can't remember the specifics, but I'll go back and research it. Maybe I'll write something about it, PFT. But I can't remember a time where we saw what we saw last night. And I didn't notice it in real time. It happened so fast, and he was asked about it, and of course, let's put a bow on this. Corrente was asked there appears to have been some contact between you and the player in question. Did that contribute to the penalty being called? No, not at all. I didn't judge that as anything that I dealt with. Well, yeah, you initiated the contact. The video showed you had brief contact with the player, and then you threw the flag, so that had nothing to do with the penalty being called. That had nothing to do with it. It was the taunting aspect. And you know what? It's entirely possible that the reporter missed the hip check, too. That it was just, because at first it looked like Marsh was just close to Kareny and accidentally brushed into him, but it was Kareny seeing somebody coming toward his space, maybe thinking that was disrespectful, to mesh with your point. You're disrespecting me. I'm going to need an apology for this. And in the meantime, let's make sure that everyone knows you've invaded my space. Let's make sure there's some contact just when odd. You go by me. And maybe they'll fine you for making contact with me.
I don't know. But, I mean, yeah. I mean, those are the thoughts that kind of percolated through my tiny, small brain. But, yes, that's what I was thinking there, too. And it's just, yeah, unfortunate. Unfortunate. And, you know, we've spotted, again, it doesn't mean the outcome would have been different. I'm not trying to say that. But we've spotted at least 7 points here to talk about where the referees influence the game. And I think that's always disappointing.
All right. Let's go ahead and take a break. My God, 49 minutes.
I know. We got going.
Segment. We got five more to do, and we got plenty more to discuss. When we return, Odell Beckham Jr. officially released. One team continues to be the one on which we should be keeping our eye. We'll discuss that when PFT Live continues right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen, remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look at this, the Kozkov Crushers.
Oh, baby. Dynasty right
they
there.
They won the GYFL.
Right.
What does GYFL
Greenwich,
stand for?
Greenwich Youth Football League Champs, right? Yeah, there we go.
Thank God it's not Greenwich Football Youth, GFY. Thank God that's not. That would be unfortunate. Look at Philip. Is Philip wearing number 2? I guess he is.
That is.
Philip doesn't look like you.
Philip, yep, he's got a little of his mom in him, too. He's got his mom's big, beautiful smile. And then that's, you know, EJ's son, who, of course, is EJ Gentile Jr. And EJ, of course, makes Simsisms and does all the great graphics and funny things that we show on this show all the time. But, yeah, big win for them. They got the victory, and it was fun to watch. I got to see the first half of the game on Sunday before coming over here. That was a great gift from NBC to let me do that. That was awesome.
So what position does Philip play?
He plays quarterback, of course, and then he is a...
Is he left-handed or right-handed?
He's right-handed, thank God. He's like his grandfather and not like his father. So, yes, he's right-handed. He had a few good throws in the game, and then he plays some corner on defense, and... Yeah, it was a tight game. 6-0 showdown. Defensive struggle, Mike.
So are we going to have to do this whole Arch Manning thing in a few years with him? Is the kid good? Does he have it?
We'll see. He's got like the love and the drive, and he is a natural thrower for sure. So we'll see where it goes from here. But he certainly loves the sport.
Philip, if you want to make it, don't listen to your dad. Listen to your grandpa.
He's probably listening.
That's the key.
Yeah, he's probably listening right now. Usually they got it on in the car on the way here, the way to school. So he's probably hearing you talk right now.
Well, that's good. Well, congratulations, Philip. Well done. Keep growing. Keep drinking milk. Drink a lot of milk. Listen to Jim Harbaugh. He drank a lot of milk. Willed his way to 6 foot 2.
Don't listen to Jim Harbaugh. That's one person we'll stop in our house.
Tell your dad I said hi. Yeah. All right. Let's get to it. Odell Beckham Jr. officially waived yesterday by the Cleveland Browns. The Giants will not be claiming him on waivers. They said so yesterday. That just would have been a beautiful development. A spite claim of Odell Beckham Jr. on waivers. We didn't sign him to trade him. We signed him to trade him and then claim him on waivers when he was cut by the Browns. That would have been the Dave Gettleman quote. The Lions aren't going to claim him. They've got dibs. But one team that did not say no, didn't say yes, but there's Pete Carroll, Seahawks coach. His team's got the cap space. Let's hear what he had to say about OBJ.
Do you intend to claim Odell Beckham Jr. and add him to your team?
You'll have to wait and see how this all goes. But at this time, I don't know. I've been on the practice field. I don't know what's going on with any of it. As you would think, we're aware of what's going on, and we've been involved to understand it and competing to know what's happening. We'll let you know as it all happens. I got to wait. So I didn't say yes or I didn't say no, but that's just because you'll see.
You'll see. Ha-ha. Look. I said this the other night. He wants to play for the Seahawks. And of all the contenders, although it's hard to call the Seahawks contenders at 3-5, they're getting Russell Wilson back. Their schedule is not overly daunting down the stretch. We'll talk. I think we're talking more about, we're talking more about Russell Wilson later. But he wants to play for Seattle. And they do, of all the non-contenders who have cap space, contenders, non-contenders, whatever, they're the best team. Right. Let me put it that way. They're the best team that has the cap space. And they could easily absorb the $7.25 million for the rest of the year. And we'll find out. Sometime after 4 p.m. Eastern, we'll find out if anyone claimed him. We'll probably find out how many total teams claimed him, although they don't release that information like they used to. They can leak it to their in-house media conglomerate so we can all find out how many teams wanted OBJ. I put the over-under yesterday at 1.5 and took the over. I think there's going to be at least 2 waiver claims for Odell Beckham Jr.
I think there will be.
I think that, look, there's 31 teams out there.
Right.
I mean, come on. The guy has shown in the past how good he is capable of being.
Sure.
There's plenty of teams with cap space to burn, and this is an entertainment business. You bring this guy to town, you're going to sell some jerseys right out of the gates. You're going to attract some attention for your team. You're going to maybe get some more asses in the seats, and this is the time of year where the asses start to do other things on Sunday afternoons, frankly. I could see at least 2 teams saying we're going to give this a shot.
I'll be interested to see there. I lean a little towards the under part of that one there, just because I just feel like, hey, there's a reputation with OBJ, and I got to feel like teams, you better know. I guess what I'm saying is if you're going to like put a claim in, on waivers for Odell Beckham Jr., you better have a feel that he's willing to play for your football team. Because that to me, I think got to the point of his career where he's probably like, I've had enough. I'm going somewhere where I'm set up for success and going to, do this his way. At least that's the way it looks a little bit here. But the Seattle thing, Mike, is interesting to me. It really is. First off, I look at Seattle and go, out of all their problems, I don't look at wide receiver as being the problem. I don't. They have other problems. I'd go, well, that makes sense to address. Offensive line, maybe corner. Maybe another defensive lineman, sure. Wide receiver? I mean, Mike, we've been making fun of them for the fact that it's like they don't know they have Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf on their team. I mean, they have a hard time getting them the football, let alone, they don't throw the ball a lot. And that's like the next part of this I wanted to bring up is like, is Seattle going to change the way they play? That's where I would tell Odell Beckham Jr., like, be careful. They want to run the ball and play defense.
Hey, you don't know how involved Russell Wilson is or isn't in this.
I know,
maybe
you're right.
This is his last ditch. Maybe this is his, hey, if you want to keep me beyond this season, this is what you have to do.
Maybe. Maybe
this
Mike,
is what
maybe,
you need to do.
Maybe Pete Carroll came to the realization after that game they lost a few weeks ago, where he kind of said, like, man,
Saints.
Russell will. Yeah, maybe that's where he came to it. Maybe they are going to open it up. They need to do something. I know that. And the other thing with Odell is that I think we've talked about this a little. Like, Seattle's scary too. I know it's maybe going to be a one-year thing, but if you're looking for a future there, you know, I think we both agree Russell Wilson's future in Seattle, to me, is very dicey. Very. From anybody you listen to that he's talked to last offseason. So you line those things up, that's to me where I'm a little surprised with the Seahawks conversation.
But you know, I remember we had the conversation in the aftermath of the Seahawks losing at home to the Saints.
Right.
And Pete Carroll saying, basically, I wouldn't be here if we didn't have Russell Wilson. He had his epiphany.
Right.
Of how important it is to him and his career and his accomplishments that he's had Russell Wilson. So maybe this is now the moment where they're finally going. They've had 2 weeks to get it ready. Run the offense through Russell Wilson. We've been saying that for the past couple of years. It's not like Kansas City and Mahomes. It's not like Buffalo and Josh Allen. They don't run the offense through Russell Wilson. They wait until 7 minutes left in the game and they're in a tough spot and Russell, can you bail us out? After they do the grind it out, ground and pound, try to win that way, then Russell, save us if we're losing. If we're working, it's great. If we're winning, it's great. If we're losing, then we need you. Maybe that really was a moment where Pete Carroll woke up to what he needs to do with his quarterback. And look, against the Jaguars, a lot of football is thrown too.
Yeah, they tried to get those guys the ball. Yeah, they finally did. Exactly right. And, of course, it led to some big plays, and it changes their team. So, again, for the team that they are, I think we would both look at them and go, wait, they're not going to win with their defense this year. That's not going to happen. They're not going to get to the playoffs and make a playoff run because of their defense. That's not going to happen because of their run game. Oh, okay, that's right. You have a superstar quarterback and two superstar receivers. You better start riding them. That's to me where Seattle drops the ball, and I'm going to be interested to see if they make this adjustment here as Russell gets back and gets healthy.
So, look, nothing Pete Carroll said takes any steam out of this possibility that it's going to be
right.
The Seahawks not just signing him as a free agent, but claiming the contract on waivers, because the Seahawks are in a pretty good position at 3-5. It's not like they're one of the last ones where it doesn't matter. There may be some teams with a better record than them that would be interested, and maybe one of those teams, you know, would move some money around to try to create the cap space, even if they don't currently have it, and then make that waiver claim, and they have him. So we'll keep an eye on that. I think that it would be a sign that Russell is using his voice. They're listening to him, and they're willing to give him something he wants, almost like Randall Cobb coming to Green Bay. They're willing to give Russell Wilson something as a gesture, as a token, as a capitulation that would hopefully get him to choose to stay, because Pete Carroll got a glimpse for a few weeks of what life would have been like over the last decade without Russell Wilson. And that it may have been like a Christmas Carol type thing, and I do not intend that pun at all. It just happens to work. You know, Marley's ghost came in the form of Geno Smith, and that caused Pete Carroll to change very dramatically his attitude on how he's going to run his football team. I don't think we can rule that out.
No, I'm with you. I don't think you can rule that out either. He might have had that epiphany there to finally go, wait, I don't know what I think. We're not the Legion of Boom. We're not the team that we were 7 years ago. Why am I still trying to play that way? And maybe he did come to that realization, and maybe he realizes his future is a little bit, you know, stapled to Russell Wilson and his future with the football team too.
So, and look, it would seem ordinarily way too early to be making a Christmas reference, but I went to the store the other day and they're already playing Christmas music. I mean, come on, man. Don't. It's November. It's early November. I know that. Why? Why Christmas music now? Why?
I agree.
I guess it's not too early to make a Christmas carol.
You got to wait till after Thanksgiving.
After Thanksgiving.
Right. To me, like,
after Thanksgiving.
The Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade starts off, kicks off like the holiday season. You're right. They're cheating now. There's too many businesses cheating and trying to get people to buy Christmas stuff right now.
Got to hurry up.
I don't like
gotta it. Got to buy the G.I. Joe with the Kung Fu grip, as they said in Trading Places. Got to get the Christmas presents now before you can't get them. Because, you know, I like how they're trying to scare the consumers, too, with all the supply chain issues. Go spend your money now. Go spend your money now. All right. Go spend some of your money during this commercial break. And God help us, everyone. More PFT Live right after this. God help us, everyone, not God bless us, everyone.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.